Welcome, everyone. It's a great pleasure seeing you here. My name is Felix Stefik. I'm one of the co-directors of 3CL. And we are welcoming Dr. Luca Cicignano for a 3CL seminar. Luca is a postdoctoral research fellow in business law at the University of Campania, called Luigi Vanvitelli, and a lecturer in business law at the University of Naples, L'Orientale. He has held visiting research positions here at the University of Cambridge, the University of Vienna, and the Max Planck Institute in Luxembourg. During the academic year 2023-2024, he served as lecturer at Heidelberg University, teaching an introduction to Italian company law. His research focuses on corporate, financial, and insolvency law. Today, he will speak on the imposed bargain in contemporary restructuring law. Luca, thank you very much for taking the time to visit us here, and we are looking forward to your presentation. After the presentation, as always, we'll have time for discussion.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Felix, for having invited me here, and thank you to Narin and Luisa as well. It's a real an honor for me to talk here. Today, I will present my last research. That is about a paradox that I have found in the European Union restructuring law. This paradox concerns restructuring plans in general. Even to simplify, I will focus just on the corporate restructuring plans and the creditor position. EU restructuring law is now regulated by an EU directive that you find on the slide. It's a really well-known directive. And this directive is inspired by Chapter 11. Chapter 11 is the 11th chapter of the US Bankruptcy Code. Many of you know this this law, and it sets out a procedure that allow a business, or in some cases an individual, to reorganize its debts under the court's supervision and according to a repayment plan approved by creditors. Chapter 11 is based on a consensual approach. This means that the debtor negotiates a reorganization plan with its creditors, and the creditors approve the proposal before it's confirmed by the court. A restructuring plan based on an agreement has been studied a lot by the economic literature, and they found that it gives us a lot of advantages. For example, better outcomes, faster proceedings, and so on. I don't want to talk a lot about this. I want just to show you that in some European countries we face a paradox today, European restructuring law replicate key feature of Chapter 11, so the consensual approach. However, now the consensual approach in Europe is not working effectively. In practice, restructuring plans are often confirmed even when many creditors don't agree. And I will analyze this paradox. So my research question is this one. I will try to explain my ideas about this topic. Why today in Europe we are facing so many non-consensual plans? And to better understand what I have just said, it's necessary to clarify some aspect of the US system works. Many of you already know this, but I have just to explain some points to better understand what I would say later. The basic idea of the US system is that the restructuring plan is the result of an agreement between debtor and creditors. So the debtor and creditors negotiate a solution. Creditors agree before the plan or accept during the plan to reduce their claims, and creditor will obtain higher recovery than liquidation. That is the foundation of the restructuring law. However, reaching an agreement with the creditors is not always easy, especially in restructuring plans where we need the approval of all creditors. And in this case, the economic literature told us that there is a situation that is called the tragedy of the empty commons, and that is strictly connected to the holdout problem. To explain this, the tragedy of empty commons and the holdout problem, I thought an example. So we can imagine that there is a group of friends who must decide to decide where to go for a dinner. So we have to imagine that there is a rule that all the friends have to express their consent. What I mean that they have to accept each friend. That is the anti-common tragedy. And that is not a problem, actually. But what it will be a problem is the holdout. It happens when one of these friends will say, I can go at the restaurant that you like. However, you have to pay me the dinner. That is the holdout problem. And that is what actually happens in restructuring as well. So it happens often that a creditor will say, yes, I can accept the plan, but you have to pay me more than the other creditors. So I think that chapter 11 is designed to address this problem. And it does with two tools, the consensual plans and non-consensual plans. The consensual plans, they don't mean that we have the consent of all the creditors, because we just have the consent of a large majority of creditors. And the approval of the creditors here is achieved through the two legal fiction. One is the class of creditors. The chapter 11 divides creditors in classes, that they are groups of creditors according to their interests. However, it's important to emphasize that, in my opinion, that is a fiction, because it's actually impossible to group all the creditors together and to say they have the same interest, because the interest will be always different. Otherwise, we have to put one creditor in one class, each creditor in each class. No? And the other legal fiction is the majority rule within the class. This means that the approval of all creditors is not required. So we just need, in the American system, the approval of the majority within each class of creditors. So that is a second fiction, because we actually don't have the approval of all the creditors, but just the approval of a large majority of creditors. However, sometimes it happens that a class of creditor doesn't accept the plan. In these cases, the US system has the non-consensual plans. I don't have time to explain this method, but what I want to emphasize is that in this case we have the cross-class cramdown, that is a mechanism that allow the confirmation of the plan without the approval of all classes. We just need the approval of one class of creditors or more. So now that the conceptual framework is clear, we can move to the paradox. I have found some empirical data about this paradox. So today, as I said before, we have this paradox. In the United States, most plans are confirmed after obtaining the approval of all creditor classes. So all the plans, most of the plans are consensual. In Europe, we are facing the opposite situation. Most of the plans are not consensual. And I have found some empirical data about this. Here you can read about the American situation. So there is a study on the your left that is, it says that in this study, there were 225 cases in the US in 6 years in Arizona and in New York. And no one of these plans were non-consensual. All the plans were approved by all the classes. On the other side, we have another study that is more recent. This study is about the subchapter 5, that is a part of the chapter 11. It is really similar, not at all, but really similar to chapter 11. And it is dedicated just to small business companies. And in this case, this study shows that the 17%, about the 70% of the plans have been consensual plans. In Italy, the situation is the opposite. I have done research on this topic, and in the last 6 months, most of the plans were non-consensual plans, about the 70%. And I can say that most of these plans were approved just by one class of creditors. Actually, initially in Italy, we had several decisions in which plans were approved without, approved, it's a big word, but were confirmed without the approval of any class of creditor. After that, the legislator enacted a new rule, and now that is not possible, but that is what happened after the implementation of the European directive. And today we just have a large majority of the plans that are non-consensual. But I examined even the situation of other European countries, and I found the same paradox in Germany, in Spain. Here you have a Spain study about this. As you can see, consensual and non-consensual restructuring plans were initially balanced, so half and half. Today, I mean 2024, the non-consensual plans are the 70%. So we have most plans today that are non-consensual in Spain. And in Germany, I did not find specific empirical research. Actually, it was really hard to find the decisions. What I can say that they didn't implement, they had a lot of decision about these new proceedings. And the cases that I found were all non-consensual. So all the plans were approved by using cross-class cram down. And in UK, I found a study, and I found a really similar situation, even if UK implemented the European directive not in the same way of the other countries, because you did implement some aspect like the priority rule. But in the UK, I found a trend that is really similar to Spain, in which initially you had half of the plan and half of the plan were consensual and not consensual. And today I found another study, another report, that it says that you are increasing non-consensual plans. Okay. So now that I hope that the empirical background is clear, I can move to a research question. I have still 10 minutes. So I think that consensual plans are failing in Europe. And the question is why? What is the reason that is behind this paradox? To answer this question, we need to start from a broader perspective. My idea is, that is actually not my idea, but I will explain it later. The US law system is a common law system. So in common law tradition, courts play a strong role because they traditionally rely on flexible, equitable reasoning when making decisions, especially in restructuring cases. By contrast, in Europe, there is a different system. I know that is not the system of UK, but I'm referring to the most of European countries, because most of European legal systems, including Italy, follow the civil law tradition. In this tradition, judges generally play a more limited role. So they have mainly to apply the law. Okay. And I believe the issue is here. The European legislator has transformed restructuring mechanisms that were originally developed in a common law environment in civil law system. Someone of you could say that this difference is not relevant because Chapter 11 is a statutory law. And actually, most of Chapter 11 is a statutory law. And actually, this idea could be true. However, I have to say that the key point is that the approach remains fundamentally different. Because, the difference, I think, lies in the role of the judge in relation to statutory rules. In the United States, as I said, judges play a more active and discretionary role, while in Europe, they are more closely guided by the legislative framework. To better illustrate this point, let me briefly clarify something. In my view, the most relevant difference is not only in the rules themselves, but in how judges approach creditors and debtors during negotiations. However, this difference is clearly visible in the individual rules. And in the next slides, I have compared the US Chapter 11 rules with the European rules. So that is about creditor classes. On the left side, we have the American rule. On the right side, we have the European rule. Classes in America are defined in a really broader provision that the judge can develop. In Europe, the EU directive is a lot more specific. For example, we have a lot of cases in which the division in classes is mandatory. So we must divide creditor in classes. Another example that is the huge difference is about the value distribution rules. These rules will apply in cross-class cramdown, but as you can see on slides, it says, the US code says that the plan does not discriminate unfairly and is fair and equitable. Just few words. In Europe, we tried to transform this principle into rigid legal rules. So we changed these rules a bit, but that is just to show practical difference. For example, the plan does not discriminate unfairly. That has been interpreted as the unequal treatment among classes. And in USA, they do the Markel test to verify this aspect. In Europe, we translated this rule in a really strict rule. Descending voting classes of affected creditors are treated at least as favorably as any other class of the same rank. So I don't know if the difference is it clear. And the directive, at least in the past, was applied to UK system as well. That is a common law system. Okay? And the other rule is the play is fair and equitable. That has been been translated into the absolute priority rule. It's a really complicated rule. I don't want to bother you with this. But again, I want to show you the difference. So in USA, we have like three words. In Europe, we implemented different and several rules that are really complicated. And I think that this is caused by the different approach. That is the final question. I'm perfectly in time. Is there a way out? Before to answer, I have to say something. I found that in Europe we are having the failure of consensual restructuring plans. And I believe that this failing is caused by an incompatibility between the American system and the European system. Honestly, I'm not sure if there is a way out, but what I believe that we have two possible choices. The first one is that we can accept more imposed proceedings. In that case, we don't need the consent of just one class of creditor. And so we should remove the consent of the creditor. And on the other side, I think that if we want to preserve a consensual approach, we need to make the European rules simpler and more equitable. So, a bit change the approach, especially some countries like Italy, that they have a rigid legal civil law system. I have finished. Thank you so much.